dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business. SwissAmerica.com brings you the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for the War of Ideas, which we will be waging here with several distinguished combatants on your side. Diana West will be our leadoff batter in segment two. We'll be talking with her about the phenomenon of dimmitude. What does it mean to be a dhimmi? Pursuant to Sharia, Diana participated in our Team B study and broke brilliantly about the kinds of proclivities we have in this country at the moment that seemingly are setting us up for very unpleasant experiences, second-class citizens or worse, under Sharia. Segment three, we'll be talking with Mackenzie Eaglin, one of the leading lights at the Heritage Foundation, a specialist in national security matters there, commenting in part about a marvelous op-ed that her boss, Ed Fulner, joined by Arthur Brooks of the American Enterprise Institute and Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard, had in yesterday's Wall Street Journal about the importance of national security and not undermining or hollowing it out, particularly in a wartime situation like this. We'll be getting into a number of different aspects of that problem, a subject I'll be talking about in a moment as well. But segment four, Andy McCarthy, cleanup batter for Tuesdays. We'll be talking with him about Muslim outreach. Actually, outrage is more like it. The extent to which the U.S. government has been now, it appears, systematically reaching out only, really, to the enemies among our Muslim American communities, the Muslim Brotherhood and its friends. So all of that straight ahead. But first up, some thoughts from moi on the question we'll be talking about a bit with Mackenzie Eaglin. In fact, I had a conversation with a man who has really been a mentor to me, certainly in the radio business. I've had the privilege of appearing on Hugh Hewitt's show periodically for, I think about 11 years. There really isn't anybody better in the business as far as I'm concerned, in terms of his command of the subject matters that make up our public policy arena in this very chaotic world. His articulateness, his thoughtfulness, his superb questioning of guests. Well, anyway, we had a chat yesterday about, among other things, the Team B report. He was very effusive in his praise for this document, and I was gratified by that, needless to say. But we also talked about a problem that I've discussed with you in the past, but that is really weighing on me as we see this inexorable march to an election that seems, at least as best I can tell, almost entirely devoid of a serious conversation with the American people about national security. We have candidates running not just from the left, but on the right as well, Tea Party candidates, among others, who seemingly will not discuss with their constituents or prospective constituents how they feel about national security. Oh, I mean, everybody is supportive of it in the abstract. But what are they going to do if elected in Washington about it? And that's a conversation that I think the voters, folks like you and me, are entitled to know. The priority that individuals seeking our votes are going to give to protecting us, not just from enemies foreign, but domestic, as their oath of office requires them to do. How will they proceed as pressures mount, in part fed by some of their own campaign platforms, to cut spending? Will they cut defense spending as well? And I know people will say, well, look, there's waste, fraud, and abuse in the Pentagon. Surely you're not saying that it should be sacrosanct. And I'm not saying it's sacrosanct. I'm perfectly prepared to admit, as I did on Hugh's show yesterday, that of course there's waste in the Pentagon. Unfortunately, there's no line item in the defense budget that says waste, fraud, and abuse, that you can simply lop off whatever amount is in that line item, and all the waste, fraud, and abuse will be gone, and all of the important stuff, whether it's paying the troops the wages that we need to induce them to serve their country, not just for patriotic purposes, but to ensure that their families are taken care of when we deploy them to combat settings again and again and again around the world, the training that they need, the equipment that they have to have, not just to fight today's wars, but tomorrow's as well. Are those things going to be actually cut if we wind up having to make substantial reductions? I mentioned that I'd spoken with Senator Tom Coburn about this last week. He assured me that he was going to take $50 billion a year out of the defense budget because he was convinced that there was that much waste, fraud, and abuse in it. And I subsequently spoke to him and asked him, where was it? Well, obviously this is something that will require care and thought, and he's a careful, thoughtful guy, so I'm trusting that he will apply it. But the problem is, if the expectations are being set now, that really the only thing that matters is reducing the size of government, we may well get a smaller government. We may well get a smaller defense budget and capability as well. And all I'm saying is I think we ought to be talking about that with the American people right now. Because as I said to Hugh Hewitt, and he actually said to me, I don't think that's what the Tea Party people want. And he's spending a lot of time with them these days. I don't think it's what most Americans want. Not Tea Party people, not independents, not conservative Republicans, not Reagan Democrats, maybe some on the far left, maybe some libertarians on the far right. But the vast majority of American people, I think, intuitively understand, have the common sense, perhaps the historical, you know, familiarity to recognize that when we have cut military capabilities, not just the program here or there, but the capabilities writ large, as Barack Obama wants to do. You know, Bob Gates is talking about taking $100 billion out of the defense budget over the next 10 years. Well, these cuts will have an impact. And what will that impact be, my friends? I believe it will be to excite our enemies, to invite them to redouble their efforts to engage in aggression against us, and perhaps to believe that they can, in fact, triumph, which is not the signal we want to be sending to enemies, again, foreign or domestic. Well, those are my thoughts. Love to hear yours. SecureFreedomRadio.com or the Frank Gaffney Twitter or Facebook accounts would be good ways to share them with me. Next up, Diana West, author, columnist, expert, Team B member on DIMMYtube. Are you ready to be a DIMMY? Straight ahead.
Do you want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at SecureFreedomRadio.org. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Pat Boone here with a news flash. Finally, there's something conservatives and liberals can agree on. Gold. For thousands of years, gold has united mankind regardless of race, religion, or politics. Gold conserves wealth from financial uncertainty, a higher cost of living, and higher taxes. Yet gold also offers liberal benefits, such as growing fourfold since 2001. In fact, gold transcends left-right politics because its value is based upon ultimate economic truth and substance. So, whether you're a conservative, liberal, or independent, gold should be a part of your portfolio and family legacy. Call Swiss America now and request their free 2010 DVD, CD, and Economic Realities Report.
Call now, 888-393-7513. That's 888-393-7513. 888-393-7513.
Imagine you are a small child living a constant nightmare of abuse and neglect. Late one night, you are rescued from this awful situation and whisked off to a shelter. It happens so fast you have no time to take anything with you. No stuffed animal, no special blanket, not even a clean change of clothes. Scared and with people you don't even know, you have nothing to cling to for comfort. Sadly, each year in America, over 300,000 children endure this trauma and are placed in foster care with empty hands and empty hearts. That's where we come in. With your help, My Stuff Bags Foundation can give these kids their very own My Stuff duffels filled with new toys, a stuffed animal, and other desperately needed items. Let's show thousands of children across America that people do care about them with new belongings and new hope. Please call 8663-MY-STUFF. Or visit mystuffbags.org. That's 8663-MY-STUFF or mystuffbags.org. Thank you.
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
If you're back to school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are talking this segment with Diana West, marvelous contributor to the War of Ideas, a woman who has, among other things, written a seminal book on the subject of how America's arrested development is bringing down Western civilization. She calls it The Death of the Grown-Up. She writes for the Washington Examiner newspaper and is syndicated columnist elsewhere around the country, and was, I'm very, very happy to say, a key member of our Team B2 group at the Center for Security Policy, and contributed powerfully to a section of the report that I want to come back to in a moment, Diana. But first of all, a proper welcome to you. Thank you for coming back to us here at Secure Freedom Radio.
Oh, delighted to be here, Frank.
We had the great pleasure of being on another radio program, Chris Plant's show yesterday, for a full 2 hours together. And that's really must listening. And you can find, I think, the audio at the Center for Security Policy's website, securefreedom.org. But, Diana, we will have only 9 minutes or so with you today, but I just wanted to pick up on something we talked at length about yesterday that I think is so important, and that is this idea that Sharia would have those of us who neither are killed or converted subjected to something that's become known as dhimmitude. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about what that's like, so that those of us who are worrying about Sharia or thinking maybe we should be worried about Sharia have a proper calibration on this particular option.
Yes, well, this is the lesson of the past. This is something, nothing new. This is absolutely the repetitive pattern of Islamic conquest. After conquest comes the dhimmitude for, as you mentioned, those religious groups, Christians and Jews largely, who have chosen not to submit to Islam and convert or die, but have been protected by a pact with the conquerors, with the new Muslim overlords. And this is the pact of the Dhimma, and it carries with it a tax historically called the jizya, which was paid with great exercises of humiliation that varied from region to region, but the point was to keep the Dhimma in its place, second, third, fourth class citizenry is what we're talking about here, without equality before the law. And as we travel forward in time, the concept of dhimmitude is the culture, the shared culture of these extremely diverse nations of peoples ranging across the continents from the north of Africa well into Eastern Europe and the Balkans and beyond. Bat Yor is the brilliant historian who came to this word, coined this notion of this shared culture. And the chilling aspect of it, and what we really must take into account, is that dhimmitude does not require de jure Islamic law, does not actually require a Sharia-controlled government. It is the culture of acting as though one were under Islamic law.
Yes.
In other words, responding through an Islamic prism to world events and philosophies and statements and life around you. It is as if one were under Islamic law.
Already, yeah.
The Western world is under.
Yeah, and we're talking with Diana West, the author of Death of the Grown-Up and columnist at the Washington Examiner, about how even before you're conquered, you can become submissive in the way that dhimmis are expected to. And Diana, one of the things that you contributed magnificently, I think, to our Team B report, and once again, folks, you can find it at shariathethreat.com. It will be out shortly as a book, but for the moment, you can download it there for free, was your section that really got into why is it we in America, particularly our government, is so seemingly prone to this kind of submissive behavior, this preemptive dhimmitude, if you will. And give us a quick rendering of that theory, if you would.
Yes, well, this was something I came to while I was writing The Death of the Grown-Up, where it suddenly occurred to me that this culture obsessed with adolescence and staying young and orienting on youthful things has given rise to a very stunted mentality that has given up so many freedoms in the interests of political correctness, that has stopped speaking out, continually adopting habits of deference to various kinds of left-wing philosophies. We talk about multiculturalism all the time. And it suddenly occurred to me that in this era of expansionist Islam, this practice that we have adopted, I believe, for different reasons, not from Islamic influence, but from our own kind of cultural decline, we have, in a sense, made ourselves the perfect targets for the kind of Sharia dictates on speech, on freedom of expression, that are required of the dhimmi. So in a sense, what I call the death of the grown-up is the perfect candidate for being a good dhimmi under Islamic law.
Yeah, really chilling and insightful. Let me just mention, before we switch gears here for just the closing couple of minutes, a marvelous book on dhimmitude, in addition to about yours, several very important works, is one by Mark Dury, an Australian who has written The Third Choice, Islam, Dhimmitude, and Freedom. And I really commend that to everybody, because it gives you a sense of where we're headed if we don't recognize that it's time to be grown-ups. It's time to hold the line against Sharia and its efforts to force our submission to it. Diana, you have written very powerfully for some time now about the threat that you see arising from failing to get things right in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And I just wonder, very quickly, in the remaining minute and a half or so we have with you, could you talk a little bit about what you see happening there now, with tankers being blown up and the drone strikes and so on?
Well, I think I see it as the natural expression, or extension rather, of what we're talking about today, of dhimmitude, because what we have seen our leadership, our government, our military do in our wars abroad is prosecute them without any thought to Islam or the Islamic cultures of these nations. In other words, we've had a see-no-Islam strategy that, for example, has given us this sense of operating in some sort of vacuum, when in fact, looking at the Pakistani example, the Pakistani army's motto is faith, piety, and jihad in the path of Allah. Now, you would think that that might give pause to our commanders in terms of arranging
clue?
Our vital supply lines coming through these kinds of countries, a country such as Pakistan. I mean, this sort of blindness, which we've seen, as mentioned in the Team B report, has carried through to our policy directives, our national security strategies, where words about Islam and jihad are now verboten. This kind of blindness is a carryover, I argue, from Death of the Grown-Up, from the dhimmitude. I mean, it's all connected. It's not merely a cultural phenomenon. It's not merely a strategic phenomenon. It is a collective crisis of where we are. And it does come, I believe, the root of it is our failure to speak of what we see, just the most innate, natural reflex that we have learned to repress.
Yeah.
And that is why we're losing.
And that is our last word. And I wish it were a little bit more upbeat, but it certainly is trenchant, and one that we need to hear. And Diana, we look forward to visiting with you further about all this in the near future. Thank you for your many contributions to the war of ideas and our understanding of how to wage and hopefully to win it. Next up, we have Mackenzie England from the Heritage Foundation on your security. Straight ahead.
Download podcasts, hear clips, read the bios of the amazing people Frank Gaffney interviews, all at securefreedomradio.org. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney. Are you tired of Congress rushing through far-reaching legislation without understanding the consequences or even reading the bill? It's given us a flawed health care plan, an ineffective stimulus package, runaway spending, and crippling debt. Now President Obama wants the Senate to treat our national security the same way by approving the new START treaty with Russia before anyone really understands its ominous implications. The treaty would leave us with fewer deployed nuclear weapons than the Russians and impede our missile defenses while doing nothing about growing nuclear threats from China, Iran, and North Korea. When it comes to keeping America safe, it can't be business as usual on Capitol Hill. Tell your senators that in an ever more dangerous world, we need a strong and reliable deterrent, not a bad treaty. Stop the START treaty now. Paid for by the Center for Security Policy, stopthestarttreaty.org.
Can I have a price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I haven't looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Steven and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Steven a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's me, your piggy bank. Remember when you were a little kid? All the dimes and quarters in my back. Yeah, that was good times. Good times. Now lately, I gotta be honest, you've been ignoring me. Money's been slipping through your hands like a greased pig. Get it? Because I'm a... Anyway, I know how it is. Now that you get a real paycheck, it's nice to have stuff. You'll start saving money next year. Well, I hate to tell you, but good saving habits start now. Put just $20 in the bank a month. Make your own coffee at home instead of that latte every morning. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Those changes alone could save you thousands of dollars a year. Come on, I'm your piggy bank. We can be together again, me and you, the special times. Anyway, if you don't want me to cry anymore, feed me. Go to feedthepig.org for more ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And welcome to today's lottery drawing. Good luck. And here's today's winning numbers. First one up, it's not yours. Second one, not yours. And another number that's not yours. Okay, this is one number that's yours. It's a 5, but you don't get any money for that. And the final number is not yours.
Yep, so chances are you're not going to hit the lottery anytime soon. Don't get us wrong. The lottery can be fun every now and then. Just please don't rely on it for your future savings. How about this? Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte every day. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Ride your bike instead of buying all that gas. These changes alone can save you thousands a year. Thousands. Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow. Feed that piggy bank. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
Welcome back. We are joined for a most important conversation by Mackenzie Eaglin of the Heritage Foundation. Mackenzie is one of their luminaries in the National Security Department at the very important Heritage Foundation, and one of the driving forces behind the work that was described, I thought, brilliantly by Arthur Brooks, William Crystal, and Mackenzie's boss, Edwin Fuldner, in the Wall Street Journal yesterday under the very important headline. I mean, I've written a few headlines in my time. This is one of the better ones. Peace doesn't keep itself. And Mackenzie Eaglin, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio once again. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for the, I'm sure, seminal role that you played in getting this particular piece into the paper. Tell us a little bit about why we find ourselves facing once again this temptation to
cut defense spending, even in time of war.
Thanks, Frank, very much. You know, five times in the last century we've talked about this. The U.S. has disarmed after a conflict, everything ranging from World War I to Vietnam, and we still seem to not be able to learn this lesson permanently, that the nation saves money by maintaining a strong standing military rather than trying to ramp up much later. And we're seeing calls for this again. You know, the recession is triggering, and the bailouts and the TARP and every, you know, the wild exorbitant spending spree that Washington has been on. Now all of a sudden everybody wants to, you know, find savings and be considered efficient with taxpayer money. And so defense is always the poster child, the go-to resource to free up funds for other domestic spending sprees, when in reality you and I both know good governance is about eliminating spending, not overspending in the first place,
right,
finding offsets when you want to spend, and all of these sorts of things. And that's something Washington is incapable of doing.
Yeah. And Mackenzie, you've been around Washington a long time, working on Capitol Hill as well as at the Heritage Foundation, and over in the Pentagon, as I recall. And you know as I do that there's inevitably the argument that, well, there's waste in the Pentagon. And neither you nor I are in favor of waste in the Pentagon or any place else, needless to say. But talk to us a little bit about something I spoke of at the beginning of the program before you joined us. You know, there isn't a line item in the Pentagon budget for waste. Where do we wring out the waste, if it is there, without doing real violence to the underlying military capabilities, especially modernization programs that we need so badly?
Well, the first point is to distinguish the efforts to truly eliminate waste from those offering political cover for politicians who just want to cut defense, because that is often used. Oh, I want to eliminate waste so we can just take $5 billion from the Pentagon. There must be $5 billion of waste in there without any reference or, you know, audit or anything like that. But, you know,
$5 billion, like, excuse me, I have to interrupt you. Tom Coburn, you know, one of the leading lights in the conservative firmament on the Republican side of the aisle, actually said in a meeting that I attended the other day in response to a question I put to him, he said $50 billion in waste is going to have to come out each year if he has his way.
See, now those kinds of numbers seem to come from nowhere from an analyst like myself. You know, the government has over 100 programs designed to eliminate fraud, waste, and abuse, and of course the Department of Defense is chief among them. There are already existing tools in place, everything ranging from the federal acquisition regulations to other specific DOD programs designed to constantly root out and eliminate waste within the budget. And these are ongoing. Policymakers need to use the tools we have better, not use it as an excuse to just find defense dollars for some other priority, because at the end of the day, eliminating waste is not a silver bullet, but absolutely must be done. Taxpayers should expect no less, and we need to hold policymakers accountable for the genuine effort as opposed to the rhetorical one.
Yeah. In this case, I think you're absolutely right. We're seeing an effort to provide political cover for those who simply want to cut defense spending no matter what. And what I worry about, Mackenzie, if we don't see, and again, we're speaking with Mackenzie England of the Heritage Foundation, if we don't have in this election cycle clarity about what people think about these issues, the priority and the, you know, the commitment that they attach to maintaining a military second to none and to deterring aggression, not simply having to cope with it after it takes place, perhaps in part because we've invited it through the seeming weakness that we're exhibiting. How important do you think it is that we have a focus on national security as people are going to the polls, not simply hope that it'll all get sorted out after they elect a bunch of people on the basis of a platform of nothing more than shrinking the government?
You know, there really should be no distinction for Americans between homeland security and national security, because if they look at it that way, you know, what affects me, what affects my family, my community, my state, then my country is typically how a lot of Americans look at their own security or problems or consider it a priority. But all of these things are linked, as you know. You know, we're seeing the terrorist threats to airports in Europe, the Christmas Day bomber, Fort Hood shooting, you know, Iran's nuclear weapon and the potential to thwart that with missile defense. I mean, these things are connected. They feel so far away. You know, Afghanistan is, you know, as far away as Antarctica to the American people in many cases, but they really do. There's always a link back here at home, and it's about our national and our personal security, and it should matter to everybody, not just because we have, you know, 100,000, you know, U.S. forces on the ground in Afghanistan and 50,000 in Iraq, although that should certainly be a priority. Americans don't like to lose war, and we shouldn't. We should all be invested in winning for a variety of reasons. But, you know, I do think we lose sight of the fact that our military exists to also shape and influence political decisions, deter would-be aggressors. We don't just maintain a standing military to fight and win. But it has a slightly higher upfront cost to do that, as you know, rather than rebuilding later, that we've seen over and over and over. And, you know, Pentagon plans are already underfunded. The Obama administration's budget would further cut defense in real dollars while it's already shrinking as a percentage of our economy and as a percentage of the federal budget, while every other program is either left unchecked on, you know, annual growth without interference from Congress or actually, you know, exploding in growth by choice of policymakers. It's quite a remarkable, you know, turn of events where the first priority of government is to make sure the American people are safe. And only then can we talk about every other important but essential priority, from education to healthcare.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Mackenzie, let me ask your indulgence to just read the last two crafts of this terrific piece in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. I really commend it to everybody, by Arthur Brooks, Ed Fuldner, and William Crystal. They concluded by saying, there are some who think the era of U.S. global leadership is over and the decline is what the future inevitably holds for us. Some even believe that decline offers us a better future in the model of a relatively pacifist social democratic, of our relatively pacifist social democratic allies. But this is an error. A weaker, cheaper military will not solve our financial woes. It will, however, make the world a more dangerous place, and it will impoverish our future. I really don't think it can be said better than that. And I thank you and the team that helped put this together, and is espousing this, for saying it so starkly at a time when it seems too few of us are clear on these fundamental points. Closing thought?
You know, just that peace and prosperity are linked to our security, as you know, and they help create those conditions and let them thrive. And they are not self-generating and they are not self-sustaining. And that is the point of this effort and this conversation that you and I continue to have, that we need to expand, because one doesn't exist without the other. Economic growth and military security are absolutely linked.
Right. Thank you, Mackenzie England. Again, brilliantly said. Your advocacy on this point is so deeply appreciated, and most especially your appearances here at Secure Freedom Radio, as well as what you're doing elsewhere. Thank you to you. Thank you to Ed and Arthur and Bill and the team that is trying to make sure this election focuses on all of the priorities, including that of national security. We'll talk to you again very soon. Next up, Andy McCarthy joins us to talk about Muslim outreach to the wrong folks. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org. Ever vigilant. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hello, friend. Pat Boone here with some good financial news for a change. Although stocks, bonds, and real estate may be stuck in a rut this year, the next mega stage of the long-term bull market in gold and silver is just beginning. Experts say gold will soon rush to new historic highs because gold alone is real money and offers value, safety, and growth. Gold is no longer a luxury. Today it's a necessity. Safety first. Start now by letting Swiss America educate and inspire you to rediscover gold for your existing IRA. Ask for their rare opportunity DVD and CD. Stop worrying about financial gloom and do something to protect yourself.
Call now, 888-393-7513. That's 888-393-7513.
Swiss America knows gold.
Call now, 888-393-7513. That's
888-393-7513.
Most days go by without a whole lot of surprises. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life, as you know it, has completely turned on its head? Would you be prepared? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Hands can do incredible things. They made every sound in this piece of music. But nothing compares to using them to help save a life. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. Visit handsonlycpr.org today. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
As a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, joining IAVA.org really helps in the transition home. It's a network of OIF and OEF vets like me who've got your back here, just like we did over there. That means when you need help navigating the GI Bill, we've got your back. And when you're dealing with the transition home, we've got your back. Or when you just want someone to share stories with, we've got your back. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org. We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your...
Hey, Charlie, what gives?
Hey, did you see that play last night?
Oh, unbelievable. What do they feed that guy?
Yeah, but they still lost.
Yeah, I know.
You know, when I was playing, what we tried to
you,
do... With
the... You played on Biltmore Street.
Hey, come on. I play in the service.
Oh, right.
Anyhow, what I'm trying to say is the kid, he should...
Yeah, he should have fallen down. Hey, you okay? Stop joking around. Oh, no. Someone call 911!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke, and many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk, but it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We have the high point of the week, one of them here at Secure Freedom Radio, Andy McCarthy's segment on Tuesdays. And Andy has contributed a most important piece to the War of Ideas with an essay in National Review Online on the 2nd of October entitled "The Trouble with Islamic Outreach." The FBI is hosting some bad actors. Andy McCarthy, welcome back. It's always great to have you with us, though it turns out almost always we talk about some very grim things, and this is a particularly grim account of what's afoot. Give us a sense of it, and then back the lens up as to what it might suggest as the larger problem with our outreach program.
Well, Frank, thanks to some great reporting by Patrick Poole, who's really an unparalleled expert about the Muslim Brotherhood's conspiracy in the United States.
A member of Team B, as were you, indeed.
Yes, and a proud B one as well. But what Patrick learned was that a character by the name of Sheikh Kifa Mustafa was a recent graduate of what the FBI calls its Citizens Academy, which is a 6-week program during which they bring people into some of the most sensitive facilities in the government, including the FBI's headquarters, its training center at Quantico, and even the top-secret National Counterterrorism Center. And as I point out in the piece, before we knew him as a graduate of the Citizens Academy, Sheikh Mustafa was best known to us as unindicted co-conspirator number 31. He was one of those who was named by the Justice Department as an unindicted co-conspirator in the most significant terrorism financing case that the Justice Department has ever brought, that the Holy Land Foundation case for sending millions of dollars to Hamas, in which several of the confederates of Sheikh Mustafa were found guilty of doing exactly that.
Yeah. And this is a stunning thing. And you're right, Patrick Poole's reporting on it has been great. We've talked with him a couple of times here at Secure Freedom Radio about it and related subjects. How does this happen? What is the thought process that is giving rise to such an clearly absurd and reckless approach to such individuals?
Well, it's a substitute for thinking that the FBI and the government at large calls Islamic outreach. And the Kool-Aid they have drunk is that somehow reaching out to Islamist groups, which usually turns out to be all the wrong Muslims, is somehow critical to our national security. And to the extent that it conflicts with common sense, which it does in almost every way, the outreach always is what trumps our national security concerns. So in this instance, you have this guy who is on the government's highest watch list for terrorists, and a guy who was not just named as a, you know, not just given a designation by the Justice Department as a co-conspirator. They actually proved evidence in the case that showed his Hamas ties, including the fact that he was paid over $150,000 by the Holy Land Foundation, which is Hamas's piggy bank in the United States.
Yeah. And was actually one of its most important employees, as I understand.
Yeah, exactly right. Performed in a band that regularly featured songs dedicated to killing Jews and glorifying Hamas. And yet when the FBI's asked about this, they say, well, he's a very important leader in the local Palestinian community, and that makes him an asset for us and somebody whose participation actually enriched the Citizens Academy experience. I'm sure it did.
Yeah. Andy, and what we know of his experience was that he not only was given access to some of these extraordinarily sensitive facilities, but that he used it transparently, it seems, as a kind of intelligence collection operation, being particularly, I think, assertive or aggressive. I can't remember the term that was used by Patrick in his questioning about how the FBI does its counterterrorism work. You, of course, have written several very important books on this subject, as well as, of course, your innumerable columns at National Review Online. Not only the most recent one, the bestseller on the New York Times list, thank God, Grand Jihad, but also the most aptly named Willful Blindness. Would you say that this is an exemplary instance of that phenomenon, or is there something beyond simply willful blindness going on here?
Well, it's a classic case of willful blindness. I mean, if you convince yourself that, you know, somehow reaching out to the people who mean you harm is a way of securing yourself and therefore turn a blind eye to all the evidence to the contrary, which in this instance is monumental, that's a classic case of willful blindness. The problem I have, of course, is that it's nowhere near singular. It's become more the rule than the exception. It's like the government has a policy of willful blindness.
Yeah. Well, and there's this chap Abu Daya that was also now given apparently access to the White House. Hatem Abu Daya. You wrote about this in your piece as well. Can you quickly just give us the essence of that saga?
Yes. He's an executive director of the Arab American Action Network, which happens to have been started with seed money provided by a young up-and-coming community organizer in Chicago named Barack Obama.
Oh, I've heard of him. Yeah.
Many years back.
The Woods Foundation, I think it was.
Which Obama sat on with the former terrorist William Ayers.
Oh, yes, the man he doesn't know very well.
Yes, yeah, right, and they provided the seed money for this outfit to their pal Rashid Khalidi, who was the former mouthpiece for the PLO.
Yasser Arafat, yeah.
This guy, Abu Deya, is now the executive director of that outfit. He was recently, I think it was in April, at the White House for White House Islamic outreach on issues of Arab concern, as it was described by the White House Communications Office. And we now find that he seems to be in the center of a potential terrorism financing investigation which is underway in Chicago.
Involving both Middle Eastern terrorism and the FARC, narco-terrorists in Latin America. Spooky. A sneak preview, Andy. I spoke about your splendid columns in National Review Online. I gather you're writing one today about a trial now underway. Tell us very quickly about that, if you wouldn't, a minute or so.
Well, Frank, they're trying to get it underway. This is the case of Ahmed Gailani, which is the first Gitmo detainee that the White House, the Obama administration, decided to move out of Guantanamo Bay to the civilian court system for trial. And they thought that this would be a pretty good test case because, of course, the embassy bombing, which this guy is complicit in, has already been successfully tried back in 2001. But unfortunately, the Department of Justice is finding that it's not such an easy thing to prosecute these cases. He has confessed to his involvement in the bombing. That confession will not be allowed to be used in the trial, nor will the jury learn about his other participation in Al-Qaeda.
And why is that, Andy?
Because of concerns over whether the voluntariness of the confession was overcome by the methods used to extract
torture, coercion.
Yes, but this is a case, Frank, quickly, where the guy was years later interviewed by the FBI, which, of course, doesn't use those methods. And he voluntarily gave them the confession, and they're keeping that out anyway.
Really? Wow. Well, we will be watching this closely with you, Andy McCarthy, and mostly thanks to your close observation and explication of these, the nexus, most especially, I think, which you add such value to of all of the many things you cover, is that nexus between the law and national security. And we're so grateful to you for doing it here each week at Secure Freedom Radio. And we look forward to talking with you again soon, if not before, certainly next week this time. And thanks to all of you for listening. We trust you will also join us for another of these programs about your freedom and your security and how best to protect them. Same time, same station tomorrow. Please join us. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, brought to you by SwissAmerica.com.
This is Frank Gaffney. Are you tired of Congress rushing through far-reaching legislation without understanding the consequences or even reading the bill? It's given us a flawed health care plan, an ineffective stimulus package, runaway spending, and crippling debt. Now President Obama wants the Senate to treat our national security the same way by approving the new START treaty with Russia before anyone really understands its ominous implications. The treaty would leave us with fewer deployed nuclear weapons than the Russians and impede our missile defenses while doing nothing about growing nuclear threats from China, Iran, and North Korea. When it comes to keeping America safe, it can't be business as usual on Capitol Hill. Tell your senators that in an ever more dangerous world, we need a strong and reliable deterrent, not a bad treaty. Stop the START treaty now. Paid for by the Center for Security Policy, stopthestarttreaty.org.